It's the Adult in the Room podcast with Victoria Taft. That's me.
Let's go, Brandon. I keep a drum like I'm Nick Cannon. Hey, hey, let's go, Brandon. Pandemic ain't real, they just planned it. Hey, hey, let's go, Brandon. When you ask questions, they start banning. Hey, hey, let's go, Brandon. Hey, hey, let's go, Brandon. Hey, hey.
Hey, good times this week. This song is number one on the iTunes chart, though it's being censored on all manner of social media. And you've heard of a supply chain problem. Have you noticed the price of cars? Used cars as well as new cars. I talked to a car analyst from iccars.com about what's going on. It's really interesting. Dan Bongino goes missing from live radio as a response to his COVID mandate objections. And the letter from the D.C. jail by one of the January 6th inmates. Been there since he was arrested. He's still awaiting trial. And it reminds me of the stuff that you used to hear about and say, don't get caught with drugs in the third world. It's a freaking nightmare. It's an embarrassment. And the federal government that runs this lockup in Washington, D.C., I mean, what's going on there? Oh, it's crazy. It is just crazy. Okay, plus a quick preview of the Kyle Rittenhouse case, which starts this week in Kenosha, Wisconsin. I'll just give you some basic overview of the case and what I think will happen. It's all coming up on the Adult in the Room podcast. Okay, so does everyone know by now where the term, let's go, Brandon, let's go, Brandon, let's go, Brandon, which replaced the widespread chant, F Joe Biden? We all know where that came from. Well, here's a review, just in case you don't. We take you to Talladega Speedway, where Brandon Brown just won his first major NASCAR race. Take it away, NBC Sports people, and notice what the crowd says in the background. Eventually, listen.
Kelly Stavis is down there with our winner, Brandon Brown.
13 Xfinity Series starts, his first career win. Didn't look too rusty on those burnouts, Brandon. Must be practicing somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, y'all could ask like my neighbors back at Coastal Carolina that I did plenty of burnouts to practice for this moment. Oh my God, this is a dream come true. Wow, Talladega, winner of the NASCAR. Oh my God, Dad, we did it. Let's go.
This race, that if you were to win, it would be incredible. How does the reality of this moment live up to the dream?
Oh my God, this is just everything we've hoped and dreamed for. This is everything I've ever wanted to do, is take the trophy home to mom and dad. And oh my God, thank you so much, Larry's Lemonade. Thank you so much, Trade the Chain. Thank you so much, Japs Construction. Thank you, Mid-Atlantic. Thank you to all of our partners. Oh my God, it's just such an unbelievable moment.
Brandon, you also told me, as you can hear the chants from the crowd, let's go, Brandon. Brandon, you told me you were going to kind of hang back those first two stages and just watch and learn. What did you learn that helped you there in those closing laps?
Oh my God, it was learning how each line didn't stay to one. And everything shifted top to bottom so much that it was kind of like, okay, let's just stay patient where we're at and hope for the best. And we saw our moment and we seized it. So, God, I'm just so proud of Brandonville Motorsports. I'm so proud of everybody on our team here at home, everybody that's worked on our team since the beginning. We did it. We did it. We did it.
Yes, you did.
We did it.
Brandon Brown, a winner now in the Xfinity Series.
So the Let's Go Brandon has replaced the potty talk other Joe Biden reference. And variations of the Let's Go Brandon songs have placed in the upper reaches of iTunes. This particular Let's Go Brandon song hit number one on iTunes. This is the one most people know. Even though the artist Bryson Gray has been censored, he's number one on iTunes. In fact, I found it on YouTube. I think he'd been censored there. And so somebody reposted it so that it's still out there. And it's, yeah, it's okay. It's all right. Listen up.
Let's go, Brandon. Pandemic ain't real. They just planned it. Hey, hey, let's go, Brandon. You ask questions, they start banning. Hey, hey, let's go, Brandon. Hey, hey, let's go, Brandon.
Yeah. Hey, let's go, Brandon. And it's clear that man a wreck. Hey, hey, Let's go, Brandon. Now the Taliban a threat. Hey, you planned it. Now the Taliban is standing on our neck. Chanting death to America. You are barely president. Listen, I don't think you hear, man. Let me make it clear, man. Better keep your hands into yourself, that stuff is weird, man. I wish I could take you in the back, play smear the queer, man. You could take the vax, I fear God, I don't fear, man. I'm on gear 10, believe me, we ready to rumble. The only play the Joe can execute is a fumble. I think we all know, he's out to lunch, that dude went camping. I'm a Christian, so how do I say this? Let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon. I keep a drum like I'm Nick Cannon. Hey, hey, let's go, Brandon. Pandemic ain't real, they just planted. Hey, hey, let's go, Brandon. When you ask questions, they start banning. Hey, hey, let's go, Brandon. Hey, hey, let's go, Brandon. Hey,
let's go, Brandon. We know he capping. Patriots out in the street taking action. Hunting us down for speaking the truth. Beat on the pedal to save all the youth. Media lying, ignore all the crying. They building back better, but only the Taliban. Pilots on strike, but to Joe, it's irrelevant. Open the border, lose all the order. Divide us up so they know that we never win, but we united. We here in the stadiums, everyone chanting it, seeing it, slandering. Biden collapsing and Democrats stealing it. Hey, we look at Joe. Can we get a refund? How about some mean tweets? Joe is a crook and he knows how to deceive. FJB is a motto in these streets. Let's go, Brandon. Sing
let's
it with
go,
me.
Brandon. I keep a drum like I'm Nick Cannon. Hey, hey, let's go, Brandon. Pandemic ain't real, they just planned it. Hey, hey, let's go, Brandon. You ask questions, they start banning. Hey,
now, so Grace sings about Brandon. A plandemic. Which is believed to be why he's been censored. But I think they would have found anything to censor over. And I just kind of wonder every once in a while when I hear about another person being censored, at whose behest is this being done? And why is it that social media platform giants like Google and other places do this at the behest? And we know this is true because the White House has admitted it, at the behest of the White House. No, let's go, Brandon. Oh, we don't want that. F Joe Biden. They're really not saying that. It's all just an illusion. And this particular song being removed on so many platforms is just another. It's just another reminder of how far we've come, how far we've devolved, how far we are no longer willing to put up with other people's opinions. I mean, if you don't think it's a plandemic as such, well, don't listen to the song. Right? Don't worry. If you don't want the government-approved censorship on private social media platforms, just start your own, right? Hey, speaking of which, that's what Dan Bongino did. He actually started Parler. Yeah, I think he's out of that now. He went to Rumble. He's also got some sort of agreement with On Locals now, which is also where I'm at. I'm on everything, but I am spending more and more time on Locals because I think that will eventually. Dave Rubin says he won't censor it. And that makes some sense. So guess what? There's going to be some real wackadoodle-doos over there, just like they are on Facebook and Twitter and everywhere else. And yet there will be other people who will not be censored because they have wrong think. Dan Bongino currently is being censored for wrong think. It is because he has been talking about the COVID shot mandate at Cumulus radio stations. And he's been absent from his live programs on his Cumulus radio stations, and they have 300 stations. So this is not nothing. So last week, the company's radio stations were playing best of Dan Bongino shows. And this means that they were doing recordings and reruns and that sort of thing. And I thought, well, gee, I mean, the guy just started basically doing this show in May. What the heck? And so, of course, I got in touch with him. I'm not like besties or anything like that. My boss over at PJ Media, after I'd done a story, said, hey, why don't you see if you can get an interview with him, and gave me his email address. And I used it. And I got in touch with him and he got back to me, and I'll tell you what happened in just a second. Well, anyway, so Bongino's doing his Fox shows, of course, his daily podcast. So he hasn't left from most of his platforms, but Cumulus presumably didn't want to give him a platform to blast their company's COVID mandate policy, which is to say a shot mandate. You either get shot up with the vaccine, quote unquote, or you're out of here. And Dan Bongino, ironically, has his COVID shot. And the reason he has his COVID shot is because he chose to take a COVID shot at the behest of his doctor, because his doctor said, you know, look, you've got lymphoma and you're fighting this cancer. you know, it's a Colin Powell kind of an issue. And deal is, dude, you need to have this shot to give you as much protection as possible. And this was when the alpha variant was still out there. And good for Dan. I mean, he made a choice. That's all good. But he doesn't like the fact that the science doesn't support a mandate. And you'll hear about a little bit of the science coming up in just a moment. Bongino calls the policy at Cumulus scientifically ignorant, which it surely appears to be. There's no opt-out for people who have had the virus and have natural immunity. There's no opt-out for religious reasons. There's no opt-out, apparently, for medical reasons, clearly. And so two recent studies show that it is a lie that what Joe Biden calls the quote-unquote pandemic of the unvaccinated isn't true. It isn't true. And they're keeping this information secret for some reason. Now, of course, the cat's out of the bag because The Lancet and another scientific entity, I think it was a study, maybe another British study, maybe it was one from Israel, shows that, of course, we have all these quote-unquote breakthrough infections with the Delta variant because of in vaccinated people. And what they found out in the latest Lancet study was there's an equal chance to give it to someone else, to expose them, if you've been vaccinated as not vaccinated or given the shot v. not given the shot. And this is an interesting conundrum because what that means is the shot ain't working. It'll work in some people, I suppose. If you're really immunocompromised, like Dan Bongino, or other kinds of things, you might want to get the shot. I mean, I have friends who have the shot, a function of their age, a function of their current health status, etc. And good for them. They believe wholeheartedly in the efficacy of this shot in their case. And good for them. One of them was really super immunocompromised, and he is delighted with the shot, and he brags about getting the booster. So it should be a choice. It should not be something that you have to do. And let's say, for example, if you are someone who stands a greater chance of having reaction to it, let's say you have pre-existing heart conditions, and we know that this particular vaccine, in fact, all of them do, especially Pfizer, gives some people a heart condition, myocarditis, pericarditis, etc., and it's from the vaccine. It's from the shot. Why would you, again, take a shot that might make your problem worse? Not a good idea. So people at the British medical journal Lancet write, in general, we identified similar SAR 25% in household contacts exposed to fully vaccinated index cases as in those exposed to unvaccinated index cases. And the finding indicates that breakthrough infections in fully vaccinated people can efficiently transmit infection in the household setting to the extent that unvaccinated people do. Put another way, people who have received COVID-19 vaccinations are able to spread the Delta variant within their households despite the vaccination status just as easily as unvaccinated individuals. So now you know. So Dan Bongino's not wrong. He's right. I swapped emails with him in hopes of following up with an interview with him since I had done a story on PJ Media about his radio silence. I noticed it last week, and I asked a radio executive about it, asking, hey, is he doing best ofs or something? And I got to thinking about it, and I wasn't told any inside baseball whatsoever. I was just like, what the hell? I mean, he's doing best ofs? And, of course, I put two and two together, started looking around, and Radio Inc. publication had noticed the same thing. And had written something and gotten reached out to Cumulus and done a little bit more legwork. And I did a little bit more legwork and broke the story, at least widely. And Dan Bongino was thankful that I'd done it and got in touch with, well, you know, he retweeted it and stuff. And he responded to my email. And so I asked him for a follow-up interview. And he said, he's only going to do his podcast. And I asked for his first interview when he can speak about it, and he promised he would. My guess is that he's under an NDA and might be a bit dicey for him to want to talk to people who are outside his sphere. But nevertheless, I asked anyway, and we will see what transpires. And maybe at some point in time, he might be on the Adult in the Room podcast. You just never know. So let's talk about this more for just a second. So let's get real. The initial COVID shot, all the ones that these experimental ones that they're still trotting out. And let's not be misled. The Pfizer shot that has been approved is not available yet to the masses, if it's available at all to anyone. So what you're taking now, under the proviso that at some point in the future, something like it will be approved by the FDA, it's sort of an ethereal thought. Three executives, two executives, big shots, left the FDA over this, being rushed. Now, you are only still getting the experimental shot. And so everything that stems from the experimental shot and the emergency authorization use that is governing all of these experimental shots, they're still experimental. That's what we're operating under. That is the operating principle. We only have the experimental vaccinations available. That's it. So the initial COVID shot worked against the Alpha variant, right? But now, because as mRNA experts say, as you've heard in the podcast, we have unwisely vaccinated into a pandemic. That is the belief of many people. And the virus is finding ways around the Alpha virus and the variant, I should say. It wants to stay alive like everything else. It's an organism. And what has happened is what has resulted is the quick development of the Delta variant. And these current shots, mRNA injections, don't help as much with the Delta variant. It helps some people, and it may make sense if you figure the pros and cons for older and more vulnerable people to get it, because the alternative, COVID, is worse for them. Now, for more on that, as I mentioned, check out my podcast from the last couple of weeks with information about this very thing. Stacey Lennox's interview, Todd Herman's interview, the doctor, UCLA doctor's interview. Check it out. Worth listening to and getting it from some experts there. Now, what we want is for people to stop weaponizing the shots against very decent people who simply want to keep working in their jobs. As we've noted over and over before, I'm sure some people that you listen to have said this. Look, they were feted as heroes 2 months ago. Now they're the villains because they refuse to get a shot they believe does not help them. There are other ways to fight this disease, or it will have relatively no impact on them. And furthermore, and maybe they think it'll be fine, but they don't like Band-Aids. That seems to be the overarching issue here, forcing people to take medication against their bodily integrity. It's a fundamental, not to mention human right, but a constitutional right. And in fact, while we have said you have to take a particular vaccination in the polio situation with a 30% death rate, that's nothing even remotely arrives at that for COVID, except if you're over 85 years old. Okay, so you're probably smart to get one, a shot. There is a great deal of in the body of law about not forcing people to get certain medications and not forcing people to have a so-called vaccine passport in order to go out to dinner. Okay? Now, I hate to be so predictable and simple, but what I want for there to be is a discussion about how the medicines available for use right now to forestall the virus is not being discussed openly. I think that since two of the vaccine companies are creating medications to do what ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine are already doing at much cheaper prices, is what's driving this blackout message by the media. CNN claimed that Joe Rogan was using horse paste. That's a direct quote, horse paste. He did not. He used the human ivermectin, as well as many other medications under the care of his doctor. He took ivermectin, an antiviral, which has been used in humans for decades. I mean, do you know that someone received the Nobel Prize for this discovery of this medication because it stopped a virus in Africa? But he also, Joe Rogan did, took several other things under the care of his doctor, and he was done with COVID in 3 or 4 days. Now, granted, Joe Rogan probably doesn't have a lot of pre-existing conditions, and he works out all the time. He's pretty healthy. He's pretty healthy. Smokes a little of the loco weed, but, you know, he's healthy. The point is, we need truth about this. We don't need lies. And the silence of the media about the good effects of these preventive medication, you know, these hydrochloroquines and the ivermectins, etc., it's not just lazy. It is media malpractice, potentially deadly. We will look back at this part of history of the media in shame. It is not good. It is, if the story is allowed to be told, people should study this for decades, years to come, and come to the conclusion that this was worse than yellow journalism ever was. So the other thing I'd like to mention is the schadenfreude by some who ardently adhere to the idea that the mRNA is everything. But they're not right. Cheering people losing their jobs, which I've seen on social media, is worse than any mean tweet I've seen from their nemesis has ever been. And these mean tweets by these folks who are cheering on people losing their job or talking about how they're murderers, it's not only not true, it's not nice. It's vindictive, it's dangerous to freedom, and you only go from bad to worse on this kind of thing. The bottom line is, if you have no bodily autonomy, the government can do anything to you. They can mandate anything. If you have no bodily autonomy, you have no freedom. You should have a choice. You should not be ordered to do anything. Even school vaccinations are not a mandate. Got it? You can still opt out your kids for a variety of reasons. It is your choice. So even before, but now with these latest studies, we know that transmitting the virus is equal between those with the shot and those without. The false premise about these externalities, about how you're at fault if someone else gets sick, to the extent it was ever valid, has flatlined. It is dead. It does not matter. People who want to be safe from the virus should take precautions. You get your shot. You wear your mask. You take your ivermectin or your hydrochloroquine or your monoclonal antibodies. Do what you need to do to stay safe. But the rest of the world should not be locked up to necessarily protect you. I was talking to my friend about this the other day. He was shocked that I, you know, because he says to me, so you think that they should be able to kill me? And I said, of course not. Even though Joe Biden said that. Remember, Joe Biden said, no, you shouldn't have the freedom to murder other people. Well, that's nonsense, of course. He's a silly man. He's not serious. And so I said to him, we should not lock down society to protect us, older people. We should not do that. We should protect ourselves. And my guess is that there will be establishments, business establishments, that will hold special hours for people who are especially vulnerable, like they do sometimes at Costco and restaurants and grocery stores. And you will be in an environment that will be something that is beneficial to you and your proclivities or your problems, your vulnerabilities. But don't lock out. Don't tell people they can't work. Don't tell an EMT he can't work because he won't get the shot or he's opposed to mandates. A 28-year-old EMT, a 28-year-old doctor, a nurse who's taking all precautions and wearing her mask, we're going to kick those people out of a job? Well, that's absurd. It's silly. It's mean. It's vindictive. It's not science. It's political science. This is being used as a brickbat against people who don't like mandates and who believe in freedom. I don't believe in killing people. I mean, have you ever had to show a piece of paper to eat in a restaurant? You don't even have to show a piece of paper to vote, for crying out loud. Now they want you to show a piece of paper to eat in a restaurant, and then they'll howl and protest at how racist it is that people who want to have a vote match the voter and use an ID as a source of doing that is a bigoted thing. I mean, it's just amazing. It truly is. So it's sort of Jim Crow-like, right? It's segregation. We're supposed to be opposed to that. That's where I came from in my life. It's frightening that people are embracing the bigotry, which is based on their political science, not science. In my West Coast, Mess Coast report for PJ Media this week, I included this story from the People's Republic of Portland. Now, I started it with this, and you'll hear this. Oh, yeah, yeah. A Portland, Oregon high school held an interesting Portland pandemic protest. Was it filled with the typical West Coast, hey, hey, ho, ho, COVID mandates have got to go? Was it the chant they learned at the city-endorsed Antifa summer camp? The whole damn system is guilty as hell? Or perhaps it was a sing-along to the old chestnut, I'm going to tell all you fascists, you may be surprised, people over this world are getting organized. Now, here's the part from KGW-TV. As students bravely and selflessly, it makes me weep, hold on. They bravely and selflessly cut class to go protest in favor of less freedom.
At least 200 students left their classrooms and gathered in front of their school to deliver a message to PPS.
This body of students has assembled to demonstrate our support for a student vaccine mandate.
The crowd was loud at times. It seems trying to make up for not feeling heard.
Considering that the board is hearing comment tonight and then voting next week, we thought it was important that they hear that there really are students who care about this vaccine mandate and support it.
Poor little tykes. They apparently don't know that the children of their age already have a near 100% COVID survival rate, according to the CDC, if they know they had COVID at all. Now, here's one of the students talking about externalities and how we need to lock everybody down and shoot everybody up, and so you can't go over to grandma's and give it to her.
I believe that you are free to do things that only damage yourself, but not refusing to get a vaccine can harm not only yourself, but all of the people around you, especially vulnerable parties such as old people or people who are immunocompromised.
Of course, the kids at this protest were all clumped together. Sure, they were outside, but they're all clumped together. So they're so obviously concerned about transmission rates of COVID. Oh, wait, anyway. So grandma's not at school, just by the way. And if you believe in the forced vaccination so much, perhaps you should go to grandma and you should force her to get a shot so that she can't readily catch it from you. And I said, IBID, Lancet study. It used to be not so long ago when students protested for more freedom. Now they rally in favor of less freedom and more tyranny. So on the topic of freedom, one of the January 6th quote-unquote rioters, who's been in prison since his arrest, wrote a letter to the world last weekend to talk about the conditions in the lockup that is in Washington, D.C., and it's run by the Department of Justice, the FBI, the feds. And this guy, Nate DeGrave from Las Vegas, came to hear Trump on January 6th of 2021 and is in the... Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, 2021. Gosh, this year has been flying. Anyway, he's in the lockup. He's he's in the lockup for things that are not as bad as the stuff you saw on the West Coast, Mest Coast, in Kenosha, in Minnesota, in Chicago, Los Angeles. He's done nothing even close, but he's still locked up. So Nate DeGrave is being held on a variety of charges, either assaulting, resisting, or impeding officers at the Capitol. Impeding is the same as assaulting? Well, that's interesting. The usual obstruction of an official proceeding. This is a charge that a lot of people scoff at. But nevertheless, the Merrick Garland and all the folks at the DOJ have mostly assigned this particular charge to people who were there on January 6th. And he's charged with parading in a building. That means he walked in the Capitol. That's a charge. Disorderly conduct, impeding a passage, and picketing. These are the charges against this man. And I don't need to tell you that these charges, if true, aren't good. I mean, if he's beaten up a cop or something, my guess is he didn't. There were some people, though. Oh, yeah. They got in the cop's face. They pushed them. And on the other hand, there were other people who were let in by the police. It's just a jump ball. But all of them are in, and they're waiting for trial. I question the veracity of the charging document by the feds. And of course, as most defendants have been, I believe he's been grossly overcharged. But it's his and others' 1-6 defendants' charges and treatment in the federal lockup that is the subject of DeGray's complaint. So I'm going to quickly run through his letter that was put out piece by piece on Twitter. So it starts out, "Dear fellow Americans, I never thought I'd write a letter like this, but we are living in very different times. This is my cry for help. My name is Nathan DeGrave, and as a nonviolent participant at the January 6th rally, I've spent the last 9 months detained. No, I am not a terrorist, extremist, or any of the other names I've been called by the government. More than anything, I'm a red-blooded patriot, and I love this country more than anything. I am being unfairly prosecuted and definitely overcharged. I never assaulted anyone, destroyed property, or stolen anything. I walked through a wide-open door to enter the Capitol along with my camera crew, hoping to get the rally on video. I was never even armed at any point inside the Capitol. Our goal was to make a documentary, to get likes and shares on social media. Yes, I wore a costume that the prosecutor refers as a paramilitary gear and body armor, but it was for the movie and it was nothing of the sort. And yet, 9 months later, here I sit, with 10 years worth of charges and no hope for a future. Their surveillance footage shows absolutely no signs of assault, and despite attempts by media companies to get it released to the public, the government has denied it. I think that's because they are fully aware that this footage is questionable at worst and exonerates me at best. Please don't be fooled by the media. I am a loving and peaceful person with no history of violence. This weaponized DOJ and their blatant resentment of my respect for President Donald Trump is putting me in a situation that makes me feel helpless in my current situation. How you can help? Despite me and other Jan Sixers experiencing these unthinkable conditions, all of us remain positive and hopeful that in the end, justice will prevail. We maintain a love for this country and the Constitution like no other. The only thing keeping us going is our undying patriotism, the camaraderie between one another, and our faith in God. Please share this letter with everyone you know, friends and family, senators, representatives, political organizers, civil rights groups, and media outlets. The truth has to get out, and the jail must pay for what they are doing to this country's citizens. As a result of this unlawful detainment the last 9 months, I have lost everything. The successful business I spent 13 years of my life working on, my apartment in Las Vegas, social media accounts with a lifetime of memories, you name it. The government has essentially canceled me. Not only that, but following my arrest, my best friend of 12 years robbed my apartment, stole my cat, and hacked my personal Instagram with 100,000 followers. Since then, I often go between feelings of hopefulness and moments of depression. I wonder if I can ever recover from this, but I have to remind myself to never give up. There are major medical complications I now struggle with as a result of the jail's neglect of my health since being here. If there is any way I hope to recover, my only hope are the ones who are reading this. I was on top of the world once upon a time, and that life seems now like only a distant memory. If there's anything you can do to help, I would appreciate anything at all. Inmates here are being extorted with lack of nutrition, forcing me to spend most of what's left on commissary, which I can no longer afford. I need desperate help with my legal expenses and just help staying here alive, in here with commissary and all the expenses I still have on the outside as my livelihood and my life has been stripped away from me. Thank you for any help you can afford, even if it is a few dollars. It goes a long way in here. Sincerely and with love, Nathaniel DeGrave. You know what I'm thinking? Hey, maybe Kim Kardashian will come to his aid. Well, this is the kind of treatment that currently the left, basically, in the city of Kenosha, Wisconsin, and the national media have been hoping would befall the 17-year-old teenager, Kyle Rittenhouse. Kyle Rittenhouse is now 18. And what happened on the night of August 25th, 2020, in Kenosha during riots was something that should be a clinic for anyone who probably shouldn't do what he did, which is to go to Kenosha and help protect a building that previously had been looted. And so some folks in the community were asked to come out, be armed, and protect these buildings. And Kyle was one of those who responded. He lives across the river from Kenosha, like Portlanders live away from Vancouverites. And he lives in Illinois, a small town in Illinois. Okay, so he came over and he helped. And what happened was he was attacked by three assailants in the crowd. Yes, he was. If you go look at my coverage of the Kyle Rittenhouse case, and I will be sharing all this coming week and throughout the trial, information, video, etc., of the happenings that night, as well as the happenings in the courtroom. And bottom line is, three people attacked Kyle Rittenhouse. Now, some people don't want to believe that, but the fact of the matter is, Kyle Rittenhouse was attacked by the people, two of whom he shot and killed. One was wounded, and he's on trial, and he's saying, in fact, that's his defense. It was all self-defense. It was. From the first attack where a guy was running at him from behind, threw an object at him, and around the same time, someone shot a gun behind him. Kyle Rittenhouse turned around and shot the guy chasing him and trying to jump him. And then he was running away from the scene, running away from the mob. And what happened? Two of the mobsters came up to go after Kyle Rittenhouse, one of whom kicked him in the head after he tripped and fell. Another brought his skateboard and whacked him over the head, sat on top of him, or at least was holding him down. And then another came after him with a handgun and pointed it at him. What was he supposed to do? Just let them beat the crap out of him? Shoot him dead? One of them with the skateboard went after his gun, a Smith & Wesson M&P rifle. M&P means military and police. Kyle Rittenhouse wanted to be a police officer, or he wanted to be an EMT. He was a trained medic, which is another reason he was there on August 25th, 2020. He was there to provide medical help, and if called upon. So that's what he came equipped to do, as well as bringing his weapon, a rifle, to forestall anybody trying to attack anything, or at least look tough doing it. And indeed, it was loaded. And by the way, underage kids, people can have that gun. However, the book has been thrown at him, and there's been an incredible amount of coverage trying to dirty up Kyle Rittenhouse. And even The Nation goes, well, be careful, Kyle Rittenhouse can get off. And this is a bad thing. And other publications have called him a white supremacist, tried to put him in the same camp with white supremacists. And they even said he met with Proud Boys. He met up with Proud Boys one time when he didn't know who they were, but they were in a restaurant he and his mom were at. And they said, hey, you're Kyle Rittenhouse. And he goes, yeah, can we get your pictures taken with you? And the New York Times still claims that the OK sign is a, you know, some sort of racist sign. I mean, they're trying to dirty him up, because if you look at the video of the three shootings, which is available out there, you will see Kyle Rittenhouse basically fighting for his life. And in each vignette, in each shooting, it clearly shows him acting in self-defense. If you go back to the very first edition of the Adult in the Room podcast with the weapon snatcher, who had a unique perspective on this case, you will learn a few things about what happens in a mob and what Kyle Rittenhouse did. And in fact, our expert in that episode, really fascinating, great story. He said Kyle Rittenhouse never should have gone there, but it's not illegal for him to go there. And it wasn't illegal for him to have a gun. So there you go. Okay, changing up the subject. We are inundated with stories about what's going on at the ports, the containers. You've got containers sitting on the docks in Long Beach in Los Angeles, unpacked, untaken away, undelivered. And there's a bunch of stuff in there, stuff we need. That's why there are current shortages. And one of the things that we've noticed is the shortage of cars. And that has something to do with the chip shortage and all that, but it has something to do with this container situation as well and the shipping problems and that sort of thing. Well, I talked to an expert from IC Cars about this, and for me, it was just a fascinating discussion and something that we probably should pay some attention to. Enjoy my conversation with Carl Brower from IC Cars. You're listening to a podcast. And you're listening to this podcast. So I'm pretty sure you are not afraid of laughing and some tough talk. And because you're a listener, you're probably an audiobook listener too. I know I've been listening to audiobooks since they were called books on tape. And that's why I'm going to tell you about the audiobooks that my company, Flamingo Audiobooks, produce. I'm currently working on a spy thriller series by John D. Trudell, whose protagonist is a former CIA guy sheep-dipped with a new legend, George Raven, who now works in deep black ops. His role is to protect the country's foremost paranormal, Josie, who has scary, smart insights into some of the nation's biggest secrets. It sounds crazy, but Trudell makes it all work. It's amazing. I've got an offer for the first 10 of you who email me at victoria@victoriataft.com. You'll receive a free copy of the latest Raven series books, Raven's Redemption on Audible. Put free audiobook in the subject line. Of course, the audiobooks are also available on Amazon as well. Raven's Run is also out if you want to start from the beginning. And Raven's Resurrection is in production right now. If you like spy thrillers like the ones written by Vince Flynn, Kyle Mills, Brad Thor, Ben Coase, you're going to love the Raven series. Carl Brower of ICCars.com. He's an executive analyst. Welcome to the Adult in the Room podcast. And my question is, has to be, have you ever seen anything like this going on right now in the car business?
No, I've not only not seen it in my 25 years, I've never even heard about it in the previous history of the automobile before I was around. So it really is. I feel like we've used the word unprecedented an unprecedented number of times in the last 18 months in this country, but unfortunately, it's because it works in so many of these situations.
I mean, it is amazing that back when Fairchild Semiconductor founded the semiconductor industry in Silicon Valley, there was really seriously never a thought that all the chips we use on a daily basis would eventually be offshored elsewhere to Korea, to Taiwan, to places, other places, and that we would become reliant upon not only those chips, but, and I know Intel's in the United States, but they're back ordered, and you would have to rely on the shipping industry, which is heavily reliant upon China. Explain how we got into this mess.
Well, like so many industries and, global supply chains, all the companies looked for the most cost-effective way to produce their products. And, you know, it's only cost-effective when the system works, obviously. And you wonder how many of the people sitting in boardrooms on the top floors of various buildings in this country right now are saying, maybe we need to add a few more variables into the cost-effective equation that take into account things we weren't thinking about before.
I, of course, as a citizen, I think about national security issues. I mean, you can't fly an F-22 Raptor. You can't fly an F-35. You can't run most missile systems, which are supposedly in defense of the United States, without some of these chips. And I know that there are certain ways that they have their own supplies. But fact of the matter is, a shortage is a shortage. And you never thought in a million years that the national security apparatus would allow this to happen.
Well, you're 100% correct. And I think there's been a rude awakening on multiple fronts in this area, right? I mean, we found out in the past 18 months that there are certain parts of the world, and we're not part of it, that control, you know, certain medical and supplies, protective gear, certain drugs. So now here we are with in integrated circuits, and it's the same thing. You know, we've decided that we'll just let other people produce all these things, assuming those people will always, of course, be around and available to produce them for us.
Of course, yeah, like aspirin. I mean, isn't that what we found out? This whole thing was the Chinese make our aspirin and a lot of other over-the-counter medicines that we rely on a daily basis, or ibuprofen and all sorts of things, and things that will get you through a pinch if you can't get seen medically for the foreseeable future. And here we are, reliant upon that. And it's astonishing. It really is. And now, of course, it gets down to our everyday consumer level. Not only are we, I'm not sure how Apple was able to put out its latest iPhone, frankly, with this chip shortage, but apparently they have more money than most others. And the other thing is of course, the car situation. Why? You're in the car business. You're with icycars.com. Why cars?
Well, what happened was kind of the perfect storm, as is always the case when these things come out of the blue and whack us like this one did. You know, you had a drop in car demand because of the pandemic, and you had a drop in car production and a drop in global chip production. Then you had a spike in things that you could still do during a global pandemic, like sit around your house playing video games or looking at computers. So personal electronics went up even more so than a lot of other things dropped, like car purchases at the start of the pandemic. Well, then, of course, once people realize that they shouldn't be taking public transportation anymore, or at least they maybe have to think about it more seriously because of all these other things we've realized in the last year and a half, car ownership and car demand went from being at one level to a new level. And so there is a new level of demand for cars. There's a whole new segment of the population that was happy to live in an urban environment and take public transportation and Uber that are now not wanting to live in an urban environment, not take public transportation or Uber. They want cars. So car demand shot up. But in the meantime, all the global chip supply and kind of direction that it was flowing for demand went to these personal electronics. So you had personal electronics spike and kind of preempt the spike in car demand. And then neither of them has really relinquished. People still want all those personal electronics, and they still want their cars now. They want the cars more than ever. And the electronics companies, you kind of mentioned it with Apple, you can guess where there's higher margins and which companies are more capable of adjusting their purchasing power to pay for more expensive chips. And as a hint, it's not the automakers.
My favorite song, or one of my favorite songs, is Fast Cars and Freedoms, that old Rascal Flatts song. And I think about being able to get in a car. If you're somebody who lives in an urban environment, there are one of those people or couples or families that have said, I want to get out away from other people, but I'm going to need a car to do that. Wanting to get out and exercise the freedom that a vehicle gives them. And now they can't, or they're going to have to do it in a much more difficult way, frankly, to do that. They're going to have to use somebody else's car. But even those somebody else's cars are very expensive.
Yeah. And that's exactly what happened, was that there was suddenly a new appreciation for the personal liberty that a car brings you. And, you know, old people like me remember how excited we were when we discovered that when we turned 16. We watched, you know, the younger generations kind of lackadaisically go get their license when they get around to it. I had all these, had all these 22, 23, 25 year olds who never got their license, which was inconceivable to people from my generation.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, when things go wrong, or when suddenly you have what feels like less control over your life, the areas where you have as much control as possible become that much more desirable and valuable to you. And personal transportation through your own car, parked in your own garage, and the ability to go wherever you want, when you want, suddenly is a lot more easily recognized as a great thing to have than it was 2 years ago.
You know, this is an interesting thing, something I didn't necessarily think I'd bring up with you, but that does highlight and spotlight the fact that we are now in an era when our political leaders have decided that electric cars are the way to go. And that's fine if you have enough electricity, which we already don't. But it does spotlight the fact that that is such a fragile area that to become reliant upon just that mode of transportation, which is their hope and their ardent desire, is pretty dangerous.
Well, we saw what happened in Texas in the past, few months, right, where they had a massive grid shutdown and the people who had generators that ran on gasoline or the people who had the newest F-150 hybrids that run on gasoline and have an inverter that can run your house when you want to, suddenly had the most freedom once again to get what they needed to get done and feel like they had control of their destiny. And all the people who had electric cars that had to plug into the grid to move around didn't feel very free or liberated.
Wait, the F-150 has an inverter or whatever you call it?
Yeah, the newest F-150 hybrid has the ability to run its energy off of its fairly massive battery pack. Now, it's a hybrid, so it's got an internal combustion engine. You fill it with gas and you drive it around. But driving it around like a regular F-150 also charges up the battery, or you can plug in the battery separately and charge it. And then if you have a full battery, you can pull up to a house that's out of energy because the grid isn't working and plug it in and make the house run off of the truck.
Holy balls.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
And that truck just came out. Like, it was, the timing was quite interesting, as you can imagine. That truck was just introduced, less than a year before this happened in Texas. And you had a not very large percentage of people who had one, but you had enough people who had one that it became very quickly obvious to everyone, that's kind of a cool feature to have now, isn't it?
Well, it's nice because we need a pickup truck and we need a generator for our house in case, because we live in an area where the weather gets bad. And so maybe my husband will go for at least one, which might be the pickup truck. And that could be an answer for at least a bridge answer.
Yeah, it's not going to, solve the problem for indefinitely, but a level of additional backup options you have when, the powers that be and the infrastructure that be, so to speak, mm-hmm. isn't doing what it's supposed to do. You have more options when you have a vehicle like that.
That's amazing. One of the things that cracks me up is I saw one of the pieces over at iccars.com and it made me laugh because this leasing cars has never been our thing, except for a business relationship. Like, for example, my husband's company leased him a car. Fine. Great. And there's not usually a lot of upside on that for us. I always feel like it's, sort of like renting a house. And so now people who have leased cars are sitting in the catbird seat.
Yep.
Explain what's going on. Funny.
leases are, the standard lease is 3 years. And so when you write a lease up as a car company or the finance arm of a car company, which is usually who's handling these, you are predicting with your best guess what that car will be worth in 3 years after the person drives away from the dealership with a brand new vehicle. And, there's metrics and there's data, and you can usually get relatively accurate predictions on 3 years out. But future is still the future, and you still ultimately never know what's going to happen. Well, all the car leases that were written up 3 years ago, believe it or not, for some reason, those guys didn't have the forbearance or the foresight to say, well, what about the pandemic that's going to hit and the global chip shortage that's going to hit in two and a half years from now? Nobody said that when they were writing leases 3 years ago. So all the used car values across the board have gone up between like 25 and 35%, depending on which exact month you're talking about, over the last 6 months and where you live. And as a result, people who have cars coming off lease right now or in the next 6 months or in the past 3 to 4 months, they have a buyout price based on 2018. And their buyout price is much lower than the current market value on those cars because of what's gone on in the past 2 years. So if your buyout price was predicted at 20 and it's a 30% increase, you could have a $26,000 car, a $27,000 car, and you buy it for the 20 grand that is written on your contract. You can either keep it and have a car that you got at 30% off the current market value if you had to go buy one, or you can flip it if you don't really need the car. If you can get rid of a car, and it's like houses, everyone's always happy when their house goes up in value until they realize that, what am I going to do, sell it and go buy another house that gone up in value big time? I don't really gain anything.
Yes.
But if I've got a leased car and I don't need it for some reason, you're looking at a 30% clean profit you just make by buying it out and flipping it immediately.
I didn't think we'd ever have a problem with used cars like we do now. And when Obama did the cash for clunkers thing, and everybody just, you know, it was all the cash for clunkers got sold off, and then there was all of a sudden shortages of cars that you wanted to buy on the used market.
Right. Yeah. All that really did was make cars more expensive for everyone. And now it's the global chip shortage. Nobody can get the new car they want because there's not enough new cars. They're hanging on to their current car and not trading it in because they can't get the new car they want. So now nobody can get the used cars they want. You know, a new car shortage essentially is immediately shadowed by a used car shortage for that reason.
When are we going to have a decent supply of cars, and will prices go appreciably down at that time?
We were thinking originally this, you know, in like the next couple months, you know, it always slows down November to February car buying for lots of obvious reasons. And we thought, well, 6 months ago, we thought, well, we'll see the chip supply go up and demand go down. And by December, January, everything will be not, if not totally normal, certainly trending that way. Well, all these indications are that we're still deep in the shortage of chips and we're nowhere near coming out of it yet. So even a slight decrease in demand in the wintertime, which almost always happens, will probably be met by as much or more shortage of supply on the chip side for the next couple months. Now the best guesses are Q2, maybe somewhere between April and June.
I've seen some estimates for 2023. That's frightening.
That's like that's best case scenario is Q2 of 2022. It could be Q2 of 2023.
Yikes. Wow. Well, what are we supposed to do? What's get on a bike? I'm not sure. In February,
you're supposed to go buy your electric car and travel around in bliss without any problems. No, what you're supposed to do if you can is to not buy a car right now. If you cannot be part of this heightened demand for vehicles because your current car, it may not be your favorite car, it may have an exhaust system that's kind of loud now, or a door that doesn't shut very well, or something like that. But if you can keep using your current car, you can kind of sit this one out for now, sit this market out, which would be my first advice for anyone. If you do have to get rid of a car and get another one for some reason, be as flexible as you can. You know, a lot of people get very picky about their cars. They want this year, make, model, trim, and color. And the idea that you're going to go out and find the exact car you want is probably not very likely just because of the shortage. And if you do find the exact car you want, especially if the dealer has any inclination that that's the exact car you want, you can take a guess on what he's going to do with the price. Mm-hmm. But if you have multiple brands, multiple models, multiple trims, and this is always a big one I try to remind people of, multiple locations. Most people, not surprisingly, think, oh, I'll just look in my local area, 20, 30, maybe 50 miles, if I'm really feeling enthusiastic, radius around my house on where I'm going to buy a car. Well, if you blow that out to 300 miles instead of 50 miles, even if it took you a total of 10 hours to go and retrieve the car physically and bring it back, if you saved $1,000, you're getting paid $100 an hour. That's not a bad rate. And you might save $5,000 if you're willing to do that.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Plus, in higher population areas, there are more cars available, obviously, as you might expect. And oftentimes, I've told my daughter when she's been looking for one, hey, look around California. You live in Oregon, but guess what? There's more cars in California. And, you know, at the time we lived in California, so we could help her out with that. But be that as it may, we could actually still go and get a car, you know, if we needed to. But now we've got all of our cars are old. So I'm thinking, oh, geez. Please, yeah. Lord, please keep them together with baling wire and Band-Aids. And, oh, man. Well, Carl, thank you. I appreciate it. Anything I haven't asked you that we really should talk about and explore?
I think we were pretty thorough. I think we covered it pretty well. But, you know, it's again, an unprecedented market for vehicles right now. And I think if consumers first have an awareness about it, you know, we see a lot of people and they haven't been paying any attention. And then they finally go to look for a car and they're like, what the heck? You know, there's no cars at their local lot. What they thought they were going to have to pay is crazy. So as is always the case with anything, knowledge is power. And, you know, IC Cars has a lot of articles about the current market and what's going on and how to do well, you know, how to buy your leased car, buy it out and flip it for money and all that. Mm-hmm. So if you can at least educate yourself on which types of cars have gone up, and it's different, you know, it's totally different between, say, trucks and coupes. For believe it or not, those two very different types of cars, but trucks, coupes, and convertibles are some of the highest appreciating cars in the last year. And then economy sedans, smaller economy cars, are some of the lowest. So just knowing that right there would give you some options on, well, I'd kind of like a cool this, that, or the other coupe, but I just need a car and I'm looking to save money. Maybe I'll just go get an economy sedan.
Mm-hmm. Good advice. Thank you. Appreciate it, Carl Brower. IcCars.com. He's an executive analyst with that company, and I really appreciate it. It was fun. Hope we can do it again.
Great talking to you. Thanks for having me on.
Remember to subscribe, follow, rate 5 stars, and give me a great review over at your favorite podcast outlets, Apple, Google, and Spotify, to name the big boys. And follow me on social media. I'm over at Parler, MeWe, Minds, Facebook, and Twitter at Victoria Taft. Don't forget the Adult in the Room podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at the Adult in the Room podcast, except Twitter only has room for the adult in the. Fine. It works. Get in touch with me at victoria@victoriataft.com. Editing, mastering, advertising, technical support, and understanding for the Adult in the Room podcast with Victoria Taft is by 1ACast. The music is Gospel by the March 4th Band of Portland, Oregon. Music for The Case of Mike Strickland is Ride or Die by RC, and it is used by permission. Find RC on all social sites at Raps by RC, Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and Instagram at Raps by RC. Imaging for the Adult in the Room podcast with Victoria Taft is by 1ACast. Logo by Hageman Creative. Find him on Instagram. Photo of Victoria Taft is by Hilly Collective. The Adult in the Room podcast is produced by Flamingo Road Studios. All rights reserved.